And yes, you did read correctly. It does say giants, offspring of male rodent like Nephilim and beautiful women. And no, I don't have access to a DNA lab, and I don't have access to those Nephilim that they found in India, and I don't have access to those giant bones that they're hiding in the Smithsonian. But I do challenge those that do have access to prove me wrong. This is based on physical evidence, eyewitness accounts of Nephilim and Rephaim, scripture, and historians. All over the net you see people saying, giant Nephilim bones been found! But there's a difference. Nephilim means fallen, Rephaim means giant. Musical genius and Illuminati hostage Donald Marshall identifies these as the Nephilim. Queen Elizabeth II owes Donald Marshall at least $1 trillion for all the songs he's written, for all the ideas that come out of him. But instead of paying him, she rewards him with satanic ritual abuse that you can't even imagine. It's so horrible.
Okay, can you tell me the color of your front door where you grew up when you were small?
White.
What would the front door look like if it was covered in graffiti?
Look a mess.
What does your mother's voice sound like?
Soft.
What would her voice sound like if she had a witch's voice?
She'd sound like grot bags.
And if you were walking along the beach, you had no socks on, walking in the sand, what would that feel like?
It would feel cold and wet.
And can you recite for me the 13 times table, just in your mind, not out loud, just in your mind? That's great. Thank you. That's brilliant. Thank you.
But they tell people that it's the other dimension or astral plane, so that if they ever go to the police, they'll say, help, I'm going to the other dimension. And then that's not true, right? You want us to police another dimension, right? But it's not another dimension or the astral plane. It's just the cloning station, like the Brownstone, Brown something massacre, Brownsville massacre down in Texas somewhere. Well, that was all about them. The children of the fold got murdered, a big religious cult. They all got murdered and chopped up. Well, the fold was the cloning station, and they were going there and getting freaked on by a bunch of elderly rich perverts. And then they didn't want to anymore. And they said, leave us alone, we have computers, we're going to tell all about the fold. And they went there, killed them all. The Picton stuff was really unsettling or disturbing because, well, Elizabeth wanted to be real close on hand to me because everybody wanted to look at me, talk to me. And I was like focused on with the spotlight there at this place because I did these songs and different money-making ideas for different people. So she always wanted to be around me to get in on the spotlight. She's like that. She's like a camera hand for all the celebrities that are there. So she was always around me. Now, the thing is, she said to strengthen my mind, she wanted me to watch all of the Picton murders. And they had a camera in the corner of the room where he did these murders. The thing was, he would walk the hooker over to a painting on the wall facing that way and say, do you like this painting? My brother painted it for me. Put his arm around the woman, and with his other hand, he'd reach in back of his pants and pull out a ball peen hammer and smock her right in the back of the head, and that was it. And he used to almost have to give her like two or three or something. And one time, one of the hookers got him. I'll tell you about that some other time or something. But he got them all. He said, I asked him one time at the cloning station, because they would bring him there and ask him what it was like and everything, and like he was a celebrity or something. It was weird. They're all trying to act evil like they're vampires or something. And he would talk and stuff, and I asked him, they asked me if I had any questions for him. I said, why a ball peen hammer? And he said, well, normal hammer has a claw in it, carpenter's hammer, and if I had to do a second strike, the claw might get hooked on somebody's clothing. One of the girls' clothing, and it might, when on my drawback, it might hook on, then he's ruined because he was just a skinny old man. And but Elizabeth used to make me watch them. They have two big screens at the cloning station over the stands, one on either side, right, so that people in the stands can look both ways. Well, a lot of people, they have police and doctors and everything there loyal so that they can have clone sex with like a Britney Spears or an Angelica Jolie or something, and while they're sleeping, because they're like, what are we doing when we're sleeping? It's a big waste of time. We can go there and have lots of fun. So, but it's a terrible, diabolical, nefarious place. I've seen all kinds of stuff. Oh, the Picton murders up in Canada, where with that guy that killed all the hookers. That was set up by them. They videotaped all the murders. They used to clone Picton into the place and had him running around talking to him, and he felt like he was like a celebrity, right? Anyway, he used to smash them with a ball peen hammer. Now, I'll tell you who was there, and this is how I know everything, okay? When I was 5, they brought me there to be used as what they call a diddle kid, okay? But all I'd do was cry and stuff. So they said, do you have any other kind of use? Do you sing or dance or something? So anyway, when I was 5, to keep them off me, I started singing like original songs there, just right out of the blue. Turns out, the first one, people liked it, and they had a famous person use it, and then they came back for more, and I made more, and other people came back wanting to hear more. It was just a kid that was making these songs, right, for free, because they never paid me. Nobody knew, right, totally foolproof. So anyway, lots of people, famous, high-profile people went there. I'm kind of apprehensive to say even, well, the people that know me know who I'm talking about, but they're the highest profile people go to these cloning centers, and they wanted to see this kid that was making these songs. Right? So I met the highest up people, and then they wanted to show me all the stuff that they had. Well, they're not shapeshifting. The thing is, I'm going to tell you what the shapeshift is, and it's really creepy. And this is the thing that they said that could wipe the world, people panicking with the riots and stuff. Because the cloning thing, people cloning people's kids, messing them up in the brain is bad enough. Remotely killing people who they don't like, which might happen to me, you never know. Thing is, the lizards. Okay, lizards been around a long time, like since before ancient Egypt and everything. And the symbol, you know, that eye, the eye of Horus with the squiggly hanging out of it? Yeah. That has to do with lizards. It's a lizard symbol. It means two things. It's a pro-lizard symbol, and it also means beware, there's lizards here. Okay. There's 3 different kinds of lizards. I'll tell you all about them. They're called Vril. The thing is, I'm not sure if it's 1 L or 2 at the end. It's Vril, V-R-I-L-L or V-R-I-L. Germans were into them. They had a club with Vril things. Anyway, there's like a 1 to 1.5 foot tall one. That's the Vril type 1. It's got scales, red scales. There's a type 2. That is not parasitic, but it's still vicious, nasty, carnivorous. They're all carnivorous. And there's a type 3 that's 8 feet tall that has a real long neck and looks like a gray alien. But it comes from deep, deep, deep underground. Below deep base deep. Like they need a methane oxygen mix to breathe, and deep underground they got sulfur pools, I guess, that make this stuff. Anyway, they come up underneath the domed bases. The government is complicit with them, basically. Now I have to tell you about the parasitic aspect of the lizards and why the Illuminati and the governments use them, okay? I'm saying this in a nutshell because it's very important. I want to get it all out on your show. Nobody's going to say this for fear of clone torture, remote control death, or death by lizards 1,000 times until you die by a heart attack or something. But I figured I have to tell people because, well, they're getting me there anyway. Like, they eased up lately asking me not to talk about it anymore, but I'm just going to. Well, the lizards have a thing, okay? They have what's called a proboscis. There's lizards out there today that have a proboscis on their face, okay? These things got it in the middle of their head, okay? And on the top of their head, this is the real type 1 and 2. The type 2 have a proboscis sheath that comes out. It sticks out. The type 1s, for instance, it's like a micro, a chocolate chip, it looks like, basically the tip of it. Now, at one point in these things' lives, because they have a long lifespan, lizard species, one point in their life, they can slowly wiggle this thing out, eject it, and it goes into somebody's eyeball. Okay, another animal. Now, it wiggles in by the sense of taste. They described this to me so like when I was like 18 years old there, and told me about it different times throughout the years of going there. They can bring you there every single night if they want to, and they did bring me there every night. They laughed at me when I said I was going to tell the world about this. They said, nobody's ever going to believe me. You won't put it together in an eloquent way. People will think that technology isn't that advanced yet with cloning, because they just clone the sheep, right? No. They've been cloning people a long time this way. Thing is, the lizard, okay, the thing squiggles in through the eye. It does a spiral around the optic nerve all the way to a certain point, and it's driven there by taste. And they said once it gets there, it has the taste of butterscotch, and then it does a feeling like holding your breath and going, pushing outwards. And at the tip of this chocolate chip, it then starts what they call sweating the quill. Now, the spinal cord stuff comes out of the spinal cord, out of the chocolate chip thingy, and it's everything that the lizard is. The lizard's whole body is dead. The little lizard thing is dead. And it can't go back in. Can't get back in. It's one way. Once it excretes this stuff, sweats this quill thing, the person's debilitated for an unknown amount of time. I don't know how long. But when they come back, they have to have some recovery time. But when they come back, they are not the person anymore. They are then the lizard. Let me put this to you flatly. The old person's consciousness is gone. The body is absolutely, totally dominated, and the lizard is smarter as a human then, and totally controls everything. Over time, it'll develop a rash. It'll lose its hair. Wars, they can do anything in the material world, but once they die, they can't even take it with them. They're just dead, right? So a bunch of billionaires got together and said, we don't want to die. We want to figure out how to live again as clones, right? Thing is, the clone is just like a negative copy of the person, though. So it's not even like the person living. It's a flawed copy.
Like a ghost.
So the thing is, what they do, they devised a way, I don't know how. The thing used to be as big as a circuit board, like that was not an Illuminati symbol, by the way. It's like
about the size of a fist, right?
Yeah, they tested this on a Chinese farmer. They showed me the video clips. Had it sticking out the guy's head and everything. Didn't compensate him, just sent him back home and said they had to do something to him. They whittled it down so that the microchip is supposedly the size of like a... just a bit bigger than an apple seed, right? And it can totally, and it's a flawed copy as well, but not as flawed. It can totally hold your mental stuff, right? Everything that you are, basically. But they need babysitters because they go pretty whack sometimes. They're missing some stuff. It's flawed. But the thing is, just like those lizards do with the eyeball thing and squiggling into the head, rich people can put their stuff on a microchip and set this into somebody's head and basically body snatch them that way as well. And they keep it secret because, of course, you know, everyone, well, they can do it to clones too, but there's more side effects if you put it into a clone's brain. So they basically body snatch people with chips in there.
Объект 682. Крупная... Если не ответишь, мы лишим тебя такой возможности и поместим тебя обратно в... Пардон? Говори. Подвинь микрофон ближе к нему. Этот микрофон на максимальной громкости. Подвинь его ближе. И так уж на максимальной дальности. Что за...
Отвратительно.
When Nephilim get old, they look like this and are accurately depicted in the movie The Dark Crystal. They wanted to be in it. They talk the same and have the same communal bellow, which they call the cord or the call. It is a built-in natural biological defense to drive real lizards away underground when they would attack. It debilitates real with how sensitive their hearing is and how they depend on sonar. They have been down there a long, long time. They try and fool people into thinking they're the good guys, the wise ones, the elders, but they're pretty mean. They look at humans as a threat and as vehicles to occupy because quality of life is better as a human than a giant rat possum thing living underground. They have technology. They are also called dragons by some. Nephilim do eat human. They're omnivores. Eat anything.
Save them.
Protocol of the Learned Elders of Zion. 2.3. Do not suppose for a moment that these statements are empty words. Think carefully of the successes we arranged for Darwinism, evolution, Marxism, communism, Nietzscheism, socialism. To us Jews, at any rate, it should be plain to see what a disintegrating importance these directives have had upon the minds of the Goyim. 8.10. We have fooled, bemused, and corrupted the youth of the Goyim by rearing them in principles and theories which are known to us to be false, although it is that they have been inculcated.
And the priest went on saying that he, the plan of Satan, to deceive the human family this way, he says it's the most intriguing thing to his mind. And he went on saying how it was going to be brought about. Said that a fellow by the name of Darwin and another fellow by the name of Thomas Henry Huxley would be used by the spirits because in their childhood they had been hypnotized by medical doctors. And they figured that they would be real good subjects to lead the people into this belief that they had, that Satan wanted to bring into people's lives.
Now, what were those 3 points again, Roger? The three things were, number one, that they did not want Satan did not want the human family to think that he or his angels existed.
Right.
The second point that you made had to do with taking control of people's minds.
That's right.
The third point was what?
Was to destroy the Bible without burning it.
Okay.
See?
And what was the strategy on that?
On that? It was very interesting because after the Great General Council it was decided that Satan would tutor Charles Darwin personally in setting up the principles of his theories of evolution. He was tutored by Lucifer himself, the fallen Lucifer. And at that time it was understood, Satan and his spirit counselors understood, that if a person was led to believe in the theory of evolution, it would, in his life, destroy completely the creation week of the Bible, the fall of man, and the plan of redemption. It would do away with it.
In one fell swoop.
Yeah. Now, he made a unique statement. He said that according to the spirits, anyone that teaches a theory of evolution is considered to be a minister of the great religious system. See, they call it the religious system, the theory of evolution, because it is a system of schooling people and getting them to disqualify themselves and being members of Christ's kingdom. And he said that every teacher of that theory is recognized by the spirits as a person of great value and receives a very special unction from Satan himself, giving great power to induce spiritual blindness, to convince and convert. Three capacities are given to those teachers of theory. Then, that's not all. The priest says that Satan considers the teachers of the theory of evolution to be so valuable to him that in the sight of all the inhabitants of the galaxies, he assigns a retinue of bright, beautiful angels to follow that educator all the remainder of his life. And that in the sight of the inhabitants of the galaxies is the greatest honor that he can bestow upon his workers, upon mankind, and until the controversy.
So, what makes a giant? Over and over again, these bones from around the world are being discovered over and over again with red hair, and they keep hiding them. The Smithsonian goes out and hides these bones like they're radioactive or something. What do they have to hide, really? These people, I don't want to believe in that sort of thing. They must have some kind of genetic disease, a giant disease. Because we all evolved from monkeys, didn't we? Even though there's monkeys still here, we must have evolved. So, that still doesn't answer the question, why are these giants everywhere? You know, one thing that makes a giant? Hybridization. That's right, hybridization. Whether you're making giant corn, or you're making the world's largest cat here. We got Hercules, the world's largest cat. He's a liger. His mother is a tiger, and his father is a lion. So what makes a giant red-headed freak, you may ask? You know, this guy has a pretty nice beehive hairdo back in the day from South America thousands of years ago. Well, you take a beautiful Persian lady, ideally this nice little olive skin lady, and you add these sexual perverts with their six boobs and their tail and their red hair that aren't even the same species.
So one of the things that struck me about this was the Egyptian, clearly Egyptian female head on that golden plate that's in there. And then this very strange little statue of this guy that has like two snakes coming up from the sides, almost like something out of Hinduism. So it's like we're seeing different religions being blended. And when you look at the newspaper with the Arabic on it, there's some Sumerian cuneiform on the gold next to that. So we've got Hindu, Egyptian, and Sumerian all represented in this one guy.
It's not uncommon, and there have been some cave-type structures that were once inhabited by these tall, red-headed, red-bearded beings that are very tall, that especially inhabited North America a long time ago. And there have been artifacts of crossover civilizations.
Wow.
This is the Dogon tribe in Mali, West Africa. They worship the exact same evil spirits the Philistines worship, Aphrodite's star. And the Dogon have an advanced knowledge of the cosmos. They knew about the planets and stars and cosmos long before any jokers were playing with telescopes in Italy. And interestingly, the Dogon also worship Dagon. Potatoes, potatoes, tomatoes, tomatoes. Judges 16:23. The Philistine rulers held a great festival, offering sacrifices, praising their god Dagon. They said, "Our God has given us victory over our enemy Samson." 1 Samuel 5. After the Philistines captured the Ark of God, they took it from the battleground at Ebenezer to the town of Ashdod. They carried the Ark of God into the temple of Dagon and placed it beside an idol of Dagon. But when the citizens of Ashdod went to see it the next morning, Dagon had fallen with his face down to the ground in front of the Ark of the Lord. So they took Dagon and put him in his place again. But the next morning the same thing happened. Dagon had fallen face down before the Ark of the Lord again. This time his head and hands had broken off and were lying in the doorway. Only the trunk of his body was left intact. That is why to this day neither the priests of Dagon nor anyone who enters the temple of Dagon in Ashdod will step on its threshold.
That out now. So what's up with the gold fish on his chest that's got the Sumerian cuneiform writing on it? Is there a connection to Sumerian somehow, you think?
Yeah, there seems to be, going back into the distant past, a steady progression from a root tongue or a root language that was a kind of a proto-ancient Sumerian language that has popped up in a very few places in modern.
5 miles from the cave site, a local museum has preserved several skulls that some believe
are recovered remains of the giants.
Inside this cabinet here are three skulls from the Lovelock Caves. When you first see these skulls, they seem to be pretty much normal-looking skulls. However, it's when we really start to compare the jaw bones with this modern dental impression of a normal adult male that we see that these jaw bones are unusually large. And these are really the skulls of giant people who were perhaps 7, even 8 feet tall. One of the odd things with these skulls is that they're not actually put on display here at the museum, and they're kept hidden in this cabinet. Now, we don't know if that's really just out of respect for the Native Americans, or whether there's really something unusual about these giant skulls that they don't want them to display.
Our people is one of a small tribe of barbarians who used to live along the Humboldt River. It was many hundred years ago. They used to waylay my people and kill and eat them. They would dig large holes in our trails at night, and if any of our people traveled at night, which they did, for they were afraid of these barbarous people, they would oftentimes fall into these holes. That tribe would even eat their own dead. Yes, they would even come and dig up our dead after they were buried, and would carry them off and eat them. Now and then they would come and make war on my people. They would fight, and as fast as they killed one another on either side, the women would carry off those who were killed. My people say they were very brave. When they were fighting, they would jump up in the air after the arrows that went over their heads, and shoot the same arrows back again. My people took some of them into their families, but they could not make them like themselves. So at last they made war on them. This war lasted a long time. Their number was about 2,600. The war lasted some 3 years. My people killed them in great numbers, and what few were left went into the thick bush. My people set the bush on fire. This was right above Humboldt Lake. Then they went to work and made peculiar bulrush boats, and went into Humboldt Lake. They could not live there very long without fire. They weren't nearly starving. My people were watching them all round the lake, and would kill them as fast as they would come on land. At last one night they all landed on the east side of the lake, and went into a cave near the mountains. It was a most horrible place, for my people watched at the mouth of the cave, and would kill them as they came out to get water. My people would ask them if they would be like us, and not eat people like coyotes or beasts. They talked the same language, but they would not give up. At last my people were tired, and they went to work and gathered wood, and began to fill up the mouth of the cave. Then the poor fools began to pull the wood inside till the cave was full. At last my people set it on fire, at the same time they cried out to them, "Will you give up and be like men, and not eat people like beasts? Say quick, we will put out the fire." No answer came from them. My people said they thought the cave must be very deep or far into the mountain. They had never seen the cave nor known it was there until then. They called out to them as loud as they could, "Will you give up? Say so, or you will all die." But no answer came. Then they all left the place. In 10 days some went back to see if the fire had gone out. They went back to my third or fifth great-grandfather and told him they must all be dead, there was such a horrible smell. This tribe was called People Eaters, and after my people had killed them all, the people round us called us Seducero. It means conqueror, it also means enemy. I do not know how we came by the name Piutes. It is not an Indian word. I think it is misinterpreted. Sometimes we are called pine nut eaters, for we are the only tribe that lives in the country where pine nuts grow. My people say that the tribe we exterminated had reddish hair. I have some of their hair, which has been handed down from father to son. I have a dress which has been in our family a great many years, trimmed with this reddish hair. I am going to wear it sometime when I lecture. It is called the morning dress, and no one has such a dress but my family.
Nevada's Mysterious Cave of the Red-Haired Giants by Terrence. Same source, helium.com. Many Native American tribes from the Northeast and Southwest still relate the legends of the Red-Haired Giants and how their ancestors fought terrible, protracted wars against the giants when they first encountered them in North America almost 15,000 years ago. Others, like the Aztecs and Mayans, recorded their encounters with a race of giants to the north when they ventured out on exploratory expeditions. Who were these red-haired giants that history books have ignored? Their burial sites and remains have been discovered on nearly every continent. In the United States, they have been unearthed in Virginia and New York State, Michigan, Illinois, and Tennessee, Arizona, and Nevada. And it's in the state of Nevada that the story of the Native Paiute's wars against the giant red-haired men transformed from a local myth to a scientific reality during 1924 when the Lovelock Caves were excavated. At one time, the Lovelock Cave was known as Horseshoe Cave because of its U-shaped interior. The cavern, located about 20 miles south of modern-day Lovelock, Nevada, is approximately 40 feet deep and 60 feet wide. It's a very old cave that predates humans on this continent. In prehistoric times, it lay underneath a giant inland lake called Lahontan that covered much of western Nevada. Geologists have determined the cavern was formed by the lake's currents and wave action. The legend: the Paiutes, a Native American tribe indigenous to parts of Nevada, Utah, and Arizona, told early white settlers about their ancestors' battles with a ferocious race of white, red-haired giants. According to the Paiutes, the giants were already living in the area. The Paiutes named the giants Shitekok, that literally means tule eaters. The tule is a fibrous water plant the giants wove into rafts to escape the Paiute's continuous attacks. They used the rafts to navigate across what remained of Lake Lahontan. According to the Paiutes, the red-haired giants stood as tall as 12 feet and were a vicious, unapproachable people that killed and ate captured Paiutes as food. Overestimation is to be expected. The Paiutes told the early settlers that after many years of warfare, all the tribes in the area finally joined together to rid themselves of the giants. One day, as they chased down the few remaining red-haired enemy, the fleeing giants took refuge in a cave. The tribal warriors demanded their enemy come out and fight, but the giants steadfastly refused to leave their sanctuary. Frustrated at not defeating their enemy with honor, underestimation is to be expected, the tribal chiefs had warriors fill the entrance to the cavern with brush and then set it on fire, in a bid to force the giants out of the cave. The few that did emerge were instantly slain with volleys of arrows. The giants that remained inside the cavern were asphyxiated. Dash honorably, I presume. Later, an earthquake rocked the region, and the cave entrance collapsed, leaving only enough room for bats to enter it and make it their home. The excavation thousands of years later, the cave was rediscovered and found to be loaded with bat guano almost 6 feet deep. Decaying bat guano becomes saltpeter, the chief ingredient of gunpowder, and was very valuable. Therefore, in 1911, a company was created specifically to mine the guano. As the mining operation progressed, skeletons and fossils were found. The guano was mined for almost 13 years before archaeologists were notified about the findings. Unfortunately, by then many of the artifacts had been accidentally destroyed or simply discarded. Nevertheless, what the scientific researchers did recover was staggering. Over 10,000 artifacts were unearthed, including the mummified remains of two red-haired giants, one a female 6.5 feet tall, the other male over 8 feet tall. Many of the artifacts, but not the giants, can be viewed at the Small Natural History Museum located in Winnemucca, Nevada. Confirmation of the myth. As the excavation of the cave progressed, the archaeologists came to the inescapable conclusion that the Paiutes myth was no myth, it was true. What led them to this realization was the discovery of many broken arrows that had been shot into the cave, and a dark layer of burned material under sections of the overlaying guano. Among the thousands of artifacts recovered from this site of an unknown people is what some scientists are convinced is a calendar, a donut-shaped stone with exactly 365 notches carved along its outside rim, and 52 corresponding notches along the inside. But that was not to be the final chapter of red-haired giants in Nevada. In February and June of 1931, two very large skeletons were found in the Humboldt Dry Lake bed near Lovelock, Nevada. One of the skeletons measured 8.5 feet tall, and was later described as having been wrapped in a gum-covered fabric similar to Egyptian mummies. The other was nearly 10 feet long. Nevada Review Minor Newspaper, June 19th, 1931 period.
So let's do a little recap here for those of us suffering from cognitive dissonance. How do you make a giant? How do you do it? Well, first of all, you take this red-headed Nephilim with his hairy back and his six boobs and his long tail, and you get him to climb up top of a beautiful woman like this nice little Persian hottie with her olive skin. And then you get this dashing and daring, bold and courageous and intelligent red-bearded giant. And I'd like to point out, I didn't write the dictionary, it's not my interpretation, I didn't define the dictionary. The word angel means a messenger. That's the primary definition of angel, a messenger. Genesis 6:2. The sons of God saw the beautiful women and took any they wanted as their wives. Then the Lord said, "My spirit will not put up with humans for such a long time, for they are only mortal flesh. In the future, their normal lifespan will be no more than 120 years. In those days and for some time after, giant Nephilites lived on the earth. For whenever the sons of God had intercourse with women, they gave birth to children who became the heroes and famous warriors of ancient times." Josephus, Antiquities 1, 3-1. "For many angels of God accompanied with women and begat sons that proved unjust and despisers of all that was good on account of the confidence they had in their own strength. For the tradition is that these men did what resembled the acts of those whom the Grecians call giants." Enoch 6:1. "And it came to pass, when the children of men had multiplied, that in those days were born unto them beautiful and comely daughters. And the angels, the children of heaven, saw and lusted after them, and said to one another, Come, let us choose us wives from among the children of men, and beget us children. And Semjaza, who was their leader, said unto them, I fear ye will not indeed agree to do this deed, and I alone shall have to pay the penalty of a great sin. And they all answered and said to him, Let us all swear an oath, and all bind ourselves by mutual imprecations not to abandon this plan, but to do this thing."
That old man is mad.
You said it, Chewie. Boy, where'd you dig up that old fossil?
Ben is a great man.
Yeah, great at getting us into trouble.
I didn't hear you give any ideas.
That old man is mad.
You said it, Chewie. Boy, where'd you dig up that old...
That old man's mad.
Well, you said it, Chewie. Where did you dig up that old fossil?